This paper grows out of my dissertation and book project, which is called Cowboy Modernity, Context of the Hollywood Western 1946 to 64. There I examine Westerns made after World War II with an eye toward understanding how they reflect larger and smaller shifts in culture, leisure, and society in the U.S. To this end, with the goal of understanding what Westerns meant to audiences and how they circulated, not only in the U.S. but internationally, I find it useful to turn to contemporary criticism of films and filmmakers from around the world, particularly from the U.K., Germany, and of course, France. These international perspectives on Westerns and American culture allow us to look at these films, through the eyes of viewers who are more detached from their immediate social and political contexts, and which are therefore better able to illuminate both formal features of films and the qualities that made Westerns seem not only distinctly American, but also distinctly modern. What follows is analysis of French reviews and theoretical essays. Here, I have focused on essays that address the depiction of the American West in Hollywood Westerns. These essays are early attempts to theorize the cinema as an art form, often written by critics who would eventually become filmmakers themselves. In them, critics attempted to establish aesthetic and ideological theories related to cinematic specificity and personal and national style. Although, to my knowledge, none of the critic filmmakers I will be discussing today ever really made a real Western, what we would consider a Western, their thoughts about Westerns reveal their primary aesthetic, ideological, and sometimes social and political concerns as far as the cinema is concerned. I want to claim that the Hollywood Western plays a small but not insignificant role in the formulation of film theory in France at two different but similar historical moments, the 1920s and the 1950s. The key figures in this discourse are, in the 20s, critic and filmmaker Louis DeLuc and Western star William S. Hart. And in the 50s, critics André Bazin, François Truffaut, Jacques Rivette, and Eric Rohmer, and the Hollywood directors Nicholas Ray and Anthony Mann. The late teens and early 20s witnessed a flowering of film criticism in France and around the world. As the war in Europe had ended, more rigorous attention could be paid to matters of art and especially of film. At the end of the teens, several films were released that proved pivotal in the evolution of film art and of thinking about film art, including Victor Sostrom's The Outlaw and His Wife from Sweden, D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, Intolerance, and Broken Blossoms from America, and Robert Wiene's The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari from Germany. This was the period of national film styles when Germany, France, and the newly formed Soviet Union sought to distinguish themselves from each other and from American films in particular. Just before the outbreak of the war, U.S. film production had almost entirely moved to Southern California, and the films coming out of Hollywood made an enormous impact on, I mean, everywhere, but post-war France particularly. U.S. films had been allowed to grow and adapt in relative isolation from European audiences and markets since 1914. Whereas the Swedish and French industries had dominated the global market in 1913, by 1919, American filmmakers had developed both a coherent cinematic language and a level of industrial and corporate coordination that were unsurpassed anywhere else. American films appeared to have reached a level of sophistication and effectiveness that stunned international audiences and filmmakers. This pattern repeated itself in miniature after World War II with what appeared to French audiences as the sudden appearance of what would come to be called film noir, as well as new technological developments like CinemaScope and stereophonic sound. Westerns played a key role in all of these developments. They were the most popular films in France and America before and after the war. From 1910 and increasingly during the war, American film companies that had originally been based on the East Coast gradually moved west, first to Chicago and Colorado, and finally ending up in Southern California. This move was due in no small part to the proximity to locations where Western adventures could be filmed. The ability of U.S. companies to film Westerns in places like Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and California allowed them to take control of the domestic market from French companies like Pathé. Pathé's Westerns were mostly shot in New Jersey, and frequently featured markers of contemporary technology and civilization in the background, such as white picket fences and telegraph poles. When the desired effect was to depict thrilling action in a far-flung pre-modern locale, white picket fences and telegraph poles tend to be distracting. What did French film critics think of American Westerns, and how did they influence their views on the ontology of the cinema and the direction French cinema should take? First, it was generally acknowledged that Westerns were exciting, entertaining, and even artistic. Not only were they popular, the leading directors and stars of Westerns were discussed in the same breath as Charlie Chaplin, Sesue Hayakawa, and D.W. Griffith. Preeminent among the cowboy stars in this period was William S. Hart, who previously had been an actor on the legitimate stage. He began making films late in life, and very soon he became a star of short series Westerns, which grew to feature-length films that were shot in the hills and wild areas just north of what was then Los Angeles. Hart became one of the biggest stars in the world, perhaps bigger than Chaplin at the time. In France, his screen persona was known as Rio Jim, also known as the Man from Nowhere. Rio Jim was one of the first good bad man Western hero characters, unafraid to perform unsavory acts for a greater good. Several critics, artists, and future filmmakers wrote of their admiration for Westerns, but the key critic and theorist of American cinema and Westerns was Louis DeLuc. DeLuc was one of the founders of Le Film, an early journal devoted to the cinema, and he was a big fan of Westerns. Early French film critics looked particularly to the American film industry for cues as to how to create films that would be both popularly appealing and artistic. In the 20s, this admiration and analysis emphasized two major features of Westerns. On the one hand, the star actor, William S. Hart, and his persona, and on the other, landscape and nature, which included decor, accessories, and mise-en-scène. There are two key essays that I want to talk about by DeLuc about Rio Jim that reflect his views of Westerns, and these views were widespread among cinephiles at the time and burgeoning filmmakers. One is a review of a film called The Cold Deck, and which was published in 1919, and the other is a longer essay called From Orestes to Rio Jim, published in 1921. In both essays, DeLuc invokes ancient Greek culture to explain the combination of classicism and modernity he found in Rio Jim. Like the Western itself, Hart bridged the gap between the ancient or classical and the modern. The American West was both primitive, a land before time, and futuristic, a destination toward which Western civilization was headed. This combination of classicism and modernity reflected in the simple stories of Westerns that were only possible in the most modern of art forms, seemed to constitute the ontological core of the cinema as a medium. These aspects were embodied in the persona of Rio Jim, who contained a primitive savagery and a noble alienation at the same time. For DeLuc, Hart's romantic Rio Jim persona fulfilled a fantasy of irresponsibility. He writes, quote, "He just passes through, and where he pauses, he suffers, which is to say that he falls in love. Once he has had enough suffering, he simply mounts his horse and rides away across the odd Western landscape and into the sunset." This is slightly paraphrased. The space of Westerns appeared to the French avant-gardists and intellectuals as a space where something like pure action and pure subjectivity could unfold as one intertitle of a Rio Jim film called The Silent Man indicates, a trackless solitude braved only by the Superman combating the eternal dryness in search of gold. I should say too that this would have been translated into French. It was very simple to just simply translate intertitles and replace them. I'm not sure if it was translated perfectly, but I assume it would have been very similar. In an early shot from the film, Hart as Silent Bud Marr emerges from the deep background, the camera using an iris to pick him out of the desert wastes. The quality is very bad. It's taken from a DVD, but you can actually see him move a little bit. Anyway, here he literally appears to come from nowhere, to simply emerge from nature itself. As the man of nature, as Nietzsche's mythic Superman, Rio Jim is unmoored from society, a pure individual in that he is not subject to anything, at least not when the film starts. Of course, the narrative of each film shows how the individual is inevitably subsumed into the social in a number of ways, including getting caught up in crooked business dealings, swindled by corrupt card players, finding religion, or the most pernicious mode of socialization in Westerns, becoming involved with a woman. Eventually, the man from nowhere will become subject to politics, money, women, sexuality. The film may end with him refusing these associations through an act of mythic defiance, riding off into the sunset. But the story the film tells is that of flirting with these associations and either relenting to or resisting them. Hart's Westerns also highlighted key features of cinema that particularly fascinated French critics, namely the secret life of objects and the depiction of nature and landscape by using real locations, each of which were cited as instances of photogenie. Roughly speaking, photogenie meant more than just being photogenic. It meant that an object, whether animate or inanimate, human, vegetable, or mineral, was somehow enhanced by the camera's gaze. Theorized by the likes of Jean Epstein, Germain Duloc, and others, photogenie was an ephemeral experience generated by the chance encounter of the camera with an object, and it became the goal of the filmmaker to manufacture or discover these moments and combinations. Photogenie was a purely cinematic experience which relied on moving projected images. In Westerns, Rio Jim was as interesting as his accoutrement and paraphernalia, which DeLuc listed in one of his essays. The buck, quote, the bucket from which Rio Jim drinks, the dice that he throws on the bar, the meaningful cards of the drunken card players, the gold-laden belt, the casino table, the stone jug into which a strong brandy is poured that will inflame the mind, and those incredible pistols which suddenly spring from the belt to paralyze dozens of brutes or characters who have disturbed and threatened us. DeLuc claimed that the attention to detail in American films looked forward to, quote, visual symphonies of the future, in which objects would play equal parts to humans in the cinematic drama. He writes that the human, quote, is no more than a detail, a fragment of the material that is the world. He is a note in the great composition of visual music. It is to the Americans that we owe this miracle. In their Far West films, they got us interested in as much in the cowboy's horse as in the cowboy himself. Furthermore, objects in Westerns could express the interior life of the hero. Rio Jim, and this is a quote from DeLuc again, Rio Jim's two heavy leather cuffs, studded with copper and laced with savage stylishness, sum up his power, anger, or sadness. Even the fists of Rio Jim, his bronzed fists, are often worth a fine portrait. The West as a place was also key to the appeal of Westerns, giving them a measure of both production value and foreignness, an alien quality that could only be described as Americanness, which was impossible to duplicate in France. Oh, wait. Thus, DeLuc praises the gray plains devoid of obstacles, high mountains shining like white screens, horses and men full of the animal vitality and the ready intensity of a simple life that affords rhythm, dimension, beauty, and provides a burst of incomparable humanity to the simplest feelings, love, duty, vengeance, which loom there. Although it was therefore distinctly modern, photogenie in Westerns reminded DeLuc of Greek theater for its universal appeal and its ability to unite an audience in an aesthetic experience. If spectacles performed in ancient Greece had to satisfy all classes of society, the cinema, for the first time in human history, had to do the same, but on a global scale. DeLuc writes, quote, the semicircle in which the cinema spectators are brought together encompasses the whole world. The most separated and diverse human beings attend the same film at the same time throughout the hemispheres. A hero can move many millions of people who neither know nor understand one another, who may even be attacking and slaughtering one another. Rio Jim is the first figure to sustain this paradox. Where is he not known? As simple as Orestes, he moves through an eternal tragedy free of psychological snares. DeLuc called Hart the tragedian of the cinema, and the American West was, quote, where the splendid fatalism of Socrates comes alive. The international, seemingly universal appeal of American Westerns held out the possibility that the cinema could generate artifacts that would last for all time, a particularly appealing prospect, perhaps, at a moment of rapid social and technological change. Thus, DeLuc asks us not to see the cowboy as a throwback figure. In concluding his essay, From Orestes to Rio Jim, DeLuc looks to the future, perhaps hyperbolically. The cinema, quote, will allow great figures to emerge out of creators yet to come, just as Aeschylus created Prometheus, as Shakespeare created Macbeth and Hamlet, as Wagner created Parsifal. It is so simple that even the cinegraphists don't believe it. Ah, well, let them disbelieve. Aeschylus did not create Prometheus on purpose. It was forced on him. Rio Jim is the avant-garde of the coming great film figures. As a cowboy, Hart was the avant-garde of civilization. As a star, he was the avant-garde of cinematic art. 30 years later, in another post-war era, French film critics after the Second World War found the conditions of their national cinema very similar to those described in the 20s. American cinema continued to dominate the globe, both aesthetically and industrially. French film critics of the late 40s and early 50s followed similar patterns as their 20s counterparts. For example, like Deluc, Eric Rohmer compared Westerns to Greek epics and classical thought, even though he admitted that the comparison smacked of pedantry. It made sense to compare epic Westerns to the Iliad because America was, quote, a nation of conquerors, and therefore, quote, a parallel between the first colonizers of the Mediterranean and the pioneers of Arizona is no mere artifice of rhetoric. Hollywood cinema again seemed classical and modern at the same time, and these two impulses intersected in its representation of the American West. Critics of the 50s did not merely admire American cinema, though. They envied it, lamenting the state of the art and industry in France. For the critics of the newly formed Cahiers du Cinéma, who would become the directors of the French New Wave, the Western did not occupy anywhere near as central a place in their minds as it did for their 1920s counterparts. In this regard and others, writers for Cahiers were by no means homogeneous in their opinions about Westerns. In the early 50s, Truffaut, Rivette, Romare, and Godard were not primarily concerned either with Westerns specifically or with genre in general, nor were they interested in myth. With the major exception of André Bazin, the godfather of the New Wave, the Western and genre were interesting only insofar as they illuminated the problem of authorship or the state of French national cinema. Where Deluc had seen Hart's Rio Jim as a figure who would lead to the next great leaps forward in the evolution of cinema, the focus of the Cahiers group was not on any particular star. Randolph Scott did not replace William S. Hart, despite their uncanny resemblance. Rather, the heroic figure of the 1950s had become the film director, particularly the director who wrote his own scripts and produced his own films. Cahiers critics set out to identify a cinema of authors that they would emulate rather than imitate. This critical stance became known as the politique des auteurs, or in America, the auteur theory. Viewing the ideal director as the author of his own films, they admired artists like Anthony Mann, Alfred Hitchcock, Howard Hawks, and especially Nicholas Ray, who were able to stand up to the studios and producers who held the purse strings of production and were seen to stifle creativity and individual expression. Not only did the auteurs need to fit this mold, so did the stories their films told. Cahiers critics often, above all, admired stories of optimism in which strong individuals stood up to a corrupt society. In this regard, they were responding to both the social conditions they perceived in post-war France and the rigid and closed structure of the French film industry, which had onerous barriers to entry until the late 1950s, including a lengthy apprenticeship period. Like the critics of the 1920s, critics in the 50s admired American films that expressed Americanness. This admiration resulted not from any specific love for America, so much as it was an expression of envy that the US seemed to have a national film style and culture that was not only coherent and recognizable, but effective, fresh, and modern. Critics wanted to see and to make French films that expressed the French experience they lived every day. At the same time, this nationalist drive admired the apparently universal appeal of Hollywood films. Yet the Cahiers critics knew they could not simply imitate American films. As Godard later said in regard to the simple stories of Westerns, quote, if one tries to do something like that in France, one looks like an intellectual. The Americans are real and natural, but this attitude means something over there. We in France must find something that means something, find the French attitude as they have found the American attitude. Keeping in mind that what these critics were looking for was a definitively French cinema, it becomes clearer what was meant and what was at stake when someone like André Bazin titled one of his essays, The Western or the American Film Par Excellence. So Westerns were only valuable for Cahiers for two reasons, generally. First was the way that their directors could express themselves artistically in rigid, convention-bound forms. The Western hero is important only insofar as he is analogous to the heroic director crusading against the studio system and film industry to articulate his artistic vision. The second reason they were important was that they represented new aesthetic possibilities for the cinema at a moment when young critics were looking forward to being young directors and hoping to break with the stilted styles and practices of French film and the French film industry. The first point was articulated best by critics like Romer and Rivette. The second point regarding new aesthetic possibilities was reflected in the reaction of Cahiers to the new technology of CinemaScope, as well as common practices in America of shooting on location with natural light and extremely mobile cameras. Prominently, Bazin was not a strict adherent to or adopter of the politique des auteurs. More than any other critic writing for Cahiers, Bazin understood the cinema as an art that is both popular and industrial, leaving room in his criticism for a consideration of genre separate from the concern for authorship. Within Cahiers, Bazin was the most interested in genre and in Western specifically. He linked the Western's appeal to the cinema itself, writing, "The Western must possess some greater secret than simply the secret of youthfulness. It must be a secret that somehow identifies it with the essence of cinema." To others, genre was seen as a constraint imposed by the industrial capitalist side of the film industry. Bazin saw the limitations of genre as productive, forcing filmmakers to invent new ways to express themselves within a commercial structure. For others like Romer and Rivette, genre was a limitation that only a true author could transcend. In addition, when they enjoyed a Western, these critics, it was not typically because of the landscape or scenery, as was the case in the 20s. There was not an expressed love for the outdoors. Rather than the sense that the imagined settings of pulp novels and feuilletons had come to life, the French critics of the 50s had found a new aspect of American cinema to admire, the wide screens of CinemaScope. Among the new possibilities available to the cinema after World War II, none was more important to the critics at Cahiers than CinemaScope. By almost doubling the width of the screen, American films privileged the expressive technique preferred by Cahiers, mise-en-scène, the staging of a scene in front of the camera and the choreographed movement of actors and camera together. The widescreen produced a sense of openness and freedom. Critics frequently invoked the notion of fresh air to describe the experience of watching CinemaScope. For example, Bazin linked this sense of openness to both the size of the screen and the Western itself, writing of Anthony Mann's CinemaScope Westerns, "When his camera pans, it breathes." This and the following images are from not an Anthony Mann film, but from a film called The Indian Fighter, starring Kirk Douglas, who's seen there. For Romer, CinemaScope represented a challenge to the physical act of viewing and asserted that the new format would inject a breath of fresh air into the medium. This is a common trope of praise for Westerns, that they have they're all about fresh air and newness and vitality. CinemaScope was seen as the future of filmmaking by the Young Turks, who were taking a polemical stand against more conservative and traditional critics, particularly British critics, who felt that widescreens were ghastly and assaultive, thrusting the spectator into the space of the film itself and eliminating the proper aesthetic distance necessary for appreciation. Of course, these features were exactly what the Cahiers critics liked about CinemaScope. CinemaScope was seen almost as a natural manifestation of America's new place in the world stage and pointed the way to the future. Romer boldly declared, in this year, 1954, now beginning, the avant-garde first and foremost is CinemaScope. CinemaScope was linked directly to Westerns because of the genre's emphasis on landscape. Bazin argued, quite simply, like a fish in a bigger tank, the cowboy is more at home on the wide screen. Hollywood producers thought Western landscapes were particularly suited to widescreen formats. Perhaps as many as 1 in 5 films shot in CinemaScope were Westerns. It is likely that an even higher percentage of Westerns were shot in other widescreen processes, such as VistaVision or MagnaScope. There were several different widescreen processes. So just to conclude, for French theorists in the 20s and the 50s, the West, as represented in the Western, presented a challenge, something to aspire to and work toward. If America had its Western, what did France have? France, critics and filmmakers seem to decide, had Paris. The films we remember today from the 1920s were either about simple everyday life and its dramas in Paris, or they are avant-garde or experimental films coming out of Dada, Cubism, and Surrealism, and all contained images of Paris in one way or another. Likewise, when the young, or any other city in France, for that matter, but Paris centrally. Likewise, when the Young Turks got their turn to make films, as seen here, they took to the streets of Paris where real locations, natural light, and careful attention to the details of lived experience could become the driving forces of a French cinema consisting of simple stories of human drama similar to those that were so admired in the Western.